Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of Life is No Coincidence. And joining me today is Dr. Franklin McMillan, lead researcher of the study that finds dogs used for breeding and their offspring in large-scale breeding operations are psychologically and often physically compromised, and they carry residual effects for years after leaving the breeding facility. Hello, Dr. McMillan.
Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. We're going to have an interesting show, and of course, we all want the same things for the animals that we love out there to be well cared for. So as listeners of this radio show, Healing From Within, know, this show is designed to encourage self-mastery and a higher, more positive way to interact with others for greater health. And this increased awareness of life and the recognition of our personal and spiritual needs for moving towards and accomplishing a successful life experience is always the goal. And in the process, I believe it is necessary that we realize it is our human and divine responsibility to care for, love, and aid others, most especially children, animals, and all forms of life on the planet. In today's episode, Dr. McMillan will discuss breeding facilities known as puppy mills and associations such as Best Friends working to improve the quality of health for breeding dogs and their offspring, and to protect sick animals from being sold to unsuspecting families all over the country. We will discuss the need to remedy this unnatural and unhealthy practice to breed new life. Frank, can you tell us something about your professional life as a veterinarian and tell us about your association with Best Friends, the group that you are working with now?
Yeah. I graduated vet school way back in 1981, and I went on and specialized in the field of internal medicine. Then I was in private practice in Los Angeles for 23 years. I was asked to help out in the Katrina hurricane rescue and met the Best Friends folks at that time, and we hit it off with each other, and they offered me a position here, and so I came here. It's been 4 years now, and when I was in practice, I was doing very standard general practice type stuff, working with the animals and loved that. But when I came here, my job was to investigate what has happened to these animals that have been through hardship of one sort or another since, obviously, here at Best Friends, I shouldn't say obviously, we are a sanctuary of close to 2,000 animals, and they come to us from, of course, all kinds of backgrounds, mainly hardship backgrounds, whether it be abuse, abandonment, rescue from hoarding or natural disasters, the whole unfortunate mess. And of course they come here with all kinds of emotional difficulties, and so I took it upon myself to undertake studies of what has gone on with these animals, and by understanding them better, of course, we can design our treatments better rather than just treat them all as scared animals. That wouldn't work any more than it would for people that were all scared. They have different reasons. And I'm sure you and all your audience knows that, of course, you have to individualize everything. Everybody's
absolutely
different.
Absolutely. Yes.
And what so is, that's what the...
Yeah. Yeah. Frank, and what would be the mission statement for Best Friends? Do they have a mission statement?
We do indeed. It's called No More Homeless Pets, and the whole role of our organization is to find homes for all the animals that don't have homes. And my work dovetails with that because, of course, animals with emotional difficulties have a harder time finding homes and working out successfully in the homes. So we can help them better by getting them healed and emotionally feeling good and enjoying their new life rather than having bits of struggles.
Yes, it's similar to what goes on with children and the adoption and children in foster homes and,
exactly.
Having to find,
right.
new homes. It's very much in line with that. Can you tell us about this study about puppy mills and how you got involved and why it is being hailed as a landmark study?
Well, the landmark study is solely because nobody's ever studied it before. What puppy mills are, for your audience who may not know, are these very large-scale breeding facilities where dogs are kept cooped up in cages, just like chickens when they're laying eggs. The only difference is that the dogs are producing puppies, which are shipped off to market, as opposed to eggs. In both cases, the parent animal is stuck back in the cage for their entire life, and they get no joy, and, that's putting it mildly. It's a miserable existence. And so what we noticed is that sometimes when these animals are fortunate enough to get out of the facility, and that usually happens because the law closes them down for legal violations and things like that, that when they come out, they were showing emotional difficulties, anything from fear to doing strange behaviors, that kind of a thing. And so when I first got here, I was actually sent out east to evaluate a number of dogs rescued from a puppy mill, and found right away that, geez, there's something here we need to know a lot more about. And so I started to do the study where we solicited people who had adopted these rescued dogs from all over the country. I incorporated the help of all the rescue groups throughout the country, not just the ones we've placed the animals with. And we got close to 1,200 dogs entered in the study. By the way, the we is myself and two professor colleagues at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. And so we decided, okay, with all these dogs, we would have the adopters of these dogs fill out a psychological profile so we could really learn what goes on with these animals when they're adopted into homes. And what we were able to find, of course, is how in fact, I'll back up and say that, of course, what we did is compared those findings with a group of what's known as control animals, which are simply pet animals having never been through any kind of trauma, and then we can tell the differences between the two groups. And what we found was dramatic. These dogs have been through a miserable existence and carry the scars out with them, not only just when they arrive in the home, but very often for years afterwards. And so it can be quite extensive. Now, before I give you any details on that, let me stress one thing, and that is that I did a follow-up study to ask people what their level of satisfaction having adopted these dogs was, because, of course, if it was a bad thing, then it would be a horrible thing to find out that nobody wants these dogs. And what we found was amazing, and that is that 95% of the people who have adopted these dogs are thrilled with having done it and would do it again. So even though we found extensive psychological trauma and harm, by no means does that mean these dogs should be avoided as adoptive pets, because they're incredibly rewarding. And in fact, you yourself mentioned it just a minute ago with children, and the same thing applies. You do need a certain mindset, of course, to adopt any animal or person with emotional difficulties. But when you do it and work with them, the rewards are just overwhelming. It's just incredible.
Then what you're saying, Frank, is that healing does come from within, and no matter what the physical or emotional trauma that these animals present, with a great deal of love from the people who adopt them, there is always hope that they can learn trust again. And they've lost their trust, obviously, because of the care that they received when they were in these places as puppies. And with loving people, good people, and usually people who want to take care of animals, do have this mindset and this compassion from their heart. So I want to ask you, how significant was the number of dogs studied? Because you said you had 1,200 dogs. And where was this study done?
Well, the study was done all over the country, and in fact, not just the United States. It was people who had adopted dogs, even a lot in Canada, and even Australia. And so it was done in the people's homes. There was no study as a laboratory type of thing. It was the people who filled out all the questionnaire of the psychological profile that we needed to get a picture of what goes on with these dogs.
Okay, Frank, so these dogs in these puppy mills are used to breed puppies for sale. Then where are these puppies sold?
Good question, and it's important to me for me to make the distinction that this study was the dogs that are used in the cages to produce puppies and cooped up for years and years on end. The other group of dogs that people often associate with puppy mills, of course, are the puppies that come out, and where they go is pet stores. They're shipped all over the country by these what are called brokers and distributors that carry them in trucks from these large-scale breeding facilities we call puppy mills through all over North America, and they sell them to pet stores, and the pet stores sell them to people. And I should point out that we just finished our study on those dogs that we just submitted for publication. It hasn't yet been published like the other study. And we also found dramatic differences in those dogs compared to dogs you might buy from a very personalized individual breeder who cares for them in their home with lots of love and socialization.
Well, that was the question I was going to ask you. How would a family go about acquiring a healthy pet if not from a pet store that is accepting these animals from the puppy mill? And you just answered it. You just said they can go
I sort of answered it. There's a lot of opportunities outside of the pet stores. There are breed rescues, because a lot of people do want a specific breed. And, of course, when you go to the shelter, which we most recommend, you may not find the breed you're looking for, but there are breed rescues for every breed. And I should point out that there are lots of purebreds in shelters. People, unfortunately, buy them when they're cute and dump them when they're need more care, and they end up in shelters, too. So you can get purebreds, but, of course, the mixed breeds are the ones that we have hundreds upon hundreds here, and of course, many need homes, and they're in shelters and make wonderful pets. So that would be the other recommendation to go to. And then lastly would be what you just mentioned, and that is the private breeders, which will have, not only will have you come visit their home, they'll require that you come and visit their home and meet with the parent dogs and see everything that's going on. And the reason they do that is these breeders care where their dogs are going, and they'll actually interview you as opposed to a pet store who, as long as you got the money, you get the dog. And that's a whole different world.
And, Frank, what actually happens to these dogs that are bred if they can't be sold to a pet store? Because I assume they're breeding a large number, and perhaps there are not enough people for it. So what happens to those dogs?
Well, all the puppies end up, they just either get shipped out and sold through pet stores. As we all know, there are some dogs that just sit in pet stores month after month. As they're getting older and older, the price goes down and down. Eventually, pet stores can virtually sell almost anything when they lower the price. But sadly, if one or more, if they don't sell at all, then they're actually shipped back to the puppy mill to become breeding dogs themselves. And that just breaks your heart, because they were like, you know, maybe just a hair away from being taken home to somebody's home, and now they're shipped back for a lifetime in a cage producing puppies again. So that's where the puppies will go. They'll eventually drop the price until almost everything sells, and then trade them back, sadly, to the puppy mill for new puppies.
That is tremendously inhumane and sad for me to hear.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to ask you something. What do you want to see change as a result of what we're talking about and what you just said? What would you like to see change so some of these conditions will not prevail any longer?
Well, the changes are extensive, and nobody running these facilities is prepared to make the changes. And the reason I say that is the laws that don't go anywhere near the changes need to be made are still resisted tremendously by these groups. But what needs to happen is that, and how they achieve it, it can be variable from facility to facility, and that is that the conditions these dogs are kept in should be enough to support a decent quality of life. However that's achieved, whether it's wide open spaces to run free in, or lots and lots of human affection and attention, any of those things can stimulate the dog and give them a lot more of what they're already lacking. So the bottom line is, I think we can all agree, no dog should have to suffer just because somebody wants puppies from the dog, and therefore the changes, far-reaching, should be enough to where all of these, and there's literally millions of these dogs, their lives have to be brought to a quality that's decent, not suffering.
I agree. And recently, Frank, I read an article in the New York Times Magazine entitled, Can the Bulldog Be Saved? And when I read the article, it suggested that to enhance certain physical qualities that prospective buyers find charming and adorable and delightful, they continue inbreeding, and that process has weakened the bulldog race or strand, creating many health abnormalities. This is also a serious problem. And as a veterinarian, what would you say about this process of inbreeding to create pedigree dogs for commercial and monetary gain, at the risk of creating very sick dogs?
Right, and I can tell you that it's beyond your wildest imagination of how bad that's gotten in terms of creating dogs with crippling arthritis, dogs that can't breathe because their faces have been shortened, like the bulldog you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't even have to be inbreeding. You could have actually good genes that you are just selecting more and more for a shorter face on a bulldog, and that's going to make the bulldog, once it gets hot outside, unable to even breathe.
Well, I saw the picture in the magazine, and it did show what a dog in the 1800s looked like and what a bulldog now looks like due to this inbreeding.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I mentioned it to my sister, who's really a dog person, she's always had a dog in her home, and whenever one has passed, she has replaced it with another one. She found that my outrage at doing that and reading that article and seeing all the health problems that they were listing for these dogs, she said, I didn't really understand how it was necessary to do this. And I was kind of irate because I couldn't understand how having, a dog that looks a certain way just because it's worth more money and would give it health, such serious health problems, could even be contemplated. I was like so horrified. And she was horrified at my approach on the subject. So is this inbreeding of bulldogs being done for all lines of pedigree dogs? And what are the implications for the future dogs and their quality of life and longevity?
Well, the future is dismal unless the course changes, because
absolutely,
all the breeding that's being done. Like, here's another example. The little dachshund has had its legs shortened and its back lengthened by progressive selective breeding. And now the dog's extremely prone to slip discs, which are unbelievably painful. I saw many of those in practice. Everybody knows what back pain is like, and this is the worst.
Yeah.
And so dachshunds, or again, either like the English bulldog or even Boston terriers and boxers, they're getting facial malformations because of this ongoing intense breeding. And so the future is dismal unless the AKC and everybody working with these dogs wakes up and says, we have to turn this back, not just stop it, but turn it back, because these dogs are so harmed right now that it's just cruel to keep breeding them like that.
Well, I know this inhumane condition we are talking about right now is a little different than what we started to talk about at the beginning of the interview. But I believe, as conscientious, evolving citizens, we have to address problems of any inhumane situation, any condition that threatens the safety and well-being of any human or animal. And I also read in another article, because there's a lot of interest now in this area. In England, Dr. Nicola Rooney and Dr. David Sargon included in one of the reports that pedigree dog breeding in the United Kingdom is a major welfare concern, and this breeding should be banned. And in the United States, some veterinarians, breeders, and animal welfare experts, yourself included, are beginning to have the same concerns. So the Humane Society, which was organized, you know, for the topic of purebred dog health and welfare, now there is an executive director, Wayne Purcell, and he said this signaled a new era for his group, which has until now focused on more obvious forms of animal cruelty, such as puppy mills and dog fighting. But these practices of breeding purebreds may cause even more harm to the well-being of dogs. So can anything be done to keep the quality of the line or species of dog fairly pure without creating health problems for them?
Well, yes and no. The best example is that when I started in this profession, and it's been, 35 or 40 years ago, the hip dysplasia, the arthritic changes that occur in the hips of especially German Shepherds, was being recognized as a problem of the genes. And what happened is they recognized this and tried to breed it out, and are to this day continuing to try to breed it out. But it's not a simple gene of what's called dominant versus recessive, to where you can just breed it right out. And so what's happened now is that those genes are intermixed in the breed, and even with recognition that it needs to be bred out and attempts to do it, still can't do it. And so that's the problem we have with a lot of these genetic disorders, is once they've become ingrained in the breed, recognizing them as simple breeding out processes, it just isn't going to happen like that.
Yeah, it's very challenging, and it's a long-term process to undo what seems to have been done. Now, I am a Reiki practitioner. People who listen to my shows know about energy healing, and I have become aware over the years that often pets will come to sit next to me and receive a healing touch as they are very conscious of energy and how to take care of themselves, and they will only stay long enough till they have received whatever amount they require, and then they're going to scoot away from me. And I'll give you an example. My son-in-law's cat, Marley, was receiving fluid transfusions for a failing kidney, and I gave him Reiki several times, and he was able to stop the treatment for a year and a half. And when he started to suffer again, I picked up that he was in pain, and I told my son-in-law to take him to the veterinarian because it was time, and he died shortly after. So what I'm saying is these pets are very aware of love, and they give so much compassion and caring to others, and it's very important for us to show them our human and intelligent handling. And I want to just talk about one other type of dog. My son has a wonderful service dog. There are service dogs to aid people with health problems. And my son Greg has a dog named Trajan, who is trained to smell diabetic low blood sugar readings and to alert my son to check his sugar. And Trajan travels with Greg all over. So I want to just say here, if dogs are smart enough to care for humans, it seems to me that humans have to care enough to prevent major psychological or emotional or physical harm to them. And that is why new laws and associations are coming into existence, as these problems are really going beyond being observed. But they're what would you say about that?
Oh, yeah, you're right on. And you, of course, touched on a bunch of subjects there. The service dogs do an amazing thing. We don't even know how they recognize a lot of these things, whether it's an upcoming seizure or heart problems, that kind of thing. But they do it, and our obligation to them is give them a great quality of life. Too many service animals in the past had been just used as tools, and of course, as I can tell you feel, they deserve everything that we can give them in terms of love and return of the affection.
Frank, I think everybody, every life form on this planet, every human, every child, every dog deserves to be treated with respect and kindness. And I think we're going to end here, and I'm going to thank you, Dr. Franklin McMillan, for the studies you were involved in, which will encourage a better understanding of the needs of all animals and the need for humans to respond to each other and all living things with greater compassion. For more information on the work being done to help these pets have a better quality of life, go to bestfriends.org. In summarizing today's show, Dr. Frank McMillan and I have discussed how a major study has provided conclusive evidence that the improper handling at breeding facilities known as puppy mills create unhealthy conditions that affect the adult dogs and their offspring, who then develop physical and psychological long-term problems and illnesses that exist even after being placed in loving homes. These pets may spend their entire life trying to recreate a sense of trust and acceptance that was taken away from them. It is my hope that by shedding light on destructive practices that damage people and animals, we will begin to see we must treat ourselves, our children, and also the animal community in a more responsible, loving, and conscientious manner. In my opinion, part of the reason we are born to have a physical life is to recognize our soul or divine heart essence and to know and then to learn to do no harm to any living creature. It is this action known as the law of attraction which says what we give out we then receive, and the practice of humane treatment towards every living thing will raise the collective consciousness, bringing a new and improved life condition for all of us. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I thank you for joining us today, and I welcome you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, and WebTalkRadio.net to learn more about energy healing, health, and wellness.